missing this.
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Yeah, you're welcome along. Joe Malloy with you this evening. The thoughts of Kenneth Egan on Katie Taylor's win over Delphine Persoon to come this hour. After 8 o'clock, Keith Wood and Rory O'Connor on the weekend's rugby. Damien Delaney is with us after 9 on the football show. This is a Champions League final to discuss. We will also play you what Stephen Kenny had to say this afternoon, press conference, as his first game in charge finally comes around. Bulgaria on Thursday week and then Finland on the Sunday. 53106 is the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack, good evening to you.
Joe, great weekend for the game of golf.
It sure was. I think another fine week for the game of golf. Its reputation, all participants as ever behaving with a touch of class, Richie, a touch of the everyman.
Absolutely. If anything, this past weekend, these past 3 or 4 days have proved that golf is 100% for everyone. It's not just an elitist sport. It's not just for those who are a step above in society. It is to be enjoyed on some level by everyone.
Nathan Murphy, it is the people's game. Good evening.
Well, as somebody who likes golf but loves a junket, what's happened over the past week seriously concerns me. Seriously. Are we not going to be allowed to have a nice dinner after golf in future, Joe? These are worrying developments.
If you can't remove a partition for a few speeches, what can you do? Is the obvious question, I would think.
Come on.
Well, let's start with the big victory of the weekend, though. And this time, Nathan, all doubts put to bed. It was a very clear victory. Dustin Johnson, excellent over the weekend.
Hey. 30 under par, wow.
That's a Golf Weekly gag for you there, Richie.
Yeah, I got it. Great, well done.
There you go. So look, lots going on. On Katie Taylor, I have to say, I was pretty worried as the fight reached its finale and then went to a decision. If nothing else, just because you can't not be influenced by the commentary, and certainly the way Matthew Macklin was talking, Adam Smith, the commentator, even afterwards, Johnny Nelson and Anthony Joshua still felt the decision. I think they thought it was wrong, almost. The verdict from Sky, Nathan, I thought was Katie was in big trouble, and then post-fight, not least from Persoon herself, which is significant, the general consensus everywhere else seemed to be that Katie had done more than enough.
Yeah, I was initially beating myself up for not knowing enough about boxing to not realise that Katie had won this quite convincingly when I was looking at the analysis of our own Ronan Mullen and people out there who know a lot about boxing. But then actually, yeah, I was influenced by what I was hearing as well as what I was seeing. Certainly on Sky, they were concerned. And they felt, I think, at most it was going to be a draw. But certainly even though Katie had a bit of a comeback, and generally it was Katie dominated the first minute of a round and Persoon dominated the second, they weren't getting into the tactical analysis of her, how strong her defense was, how strong her counterpunching was. They were very much influenced by the brawler of Persoon, and that even though she was missing a lot, that she was being the more positive, being the more attacking, and that meant that Katie was in real trouble. Whereas actually, in the cold light of day, all the analysis, and as you say, from Persoon herself, in what was a really interesting interview afterwards, was that even the punches she was landing, she didn't feel she was hurting Katie at any stage. Mm.
She said, this time I respect the result. Yeah. Is what Persoon said for me. The weight was a bit too much this time around. I didn't feel like I had enough power to hurt Katie. I tried to get my weight up, but I couldn't hurt her this time. And if you don't hurt her, it's technical and she's good at moving around. You have to hurt her. Otherwise, she gets around. The power, it was not enough. I have got no problem with this decision and my respect she deserves. She also, by the way, was fought about 8 rounds with a broken nose. I mean, she was utterly relentless. She just would not stop coming at Taylor, regardless of how her face continued to morph.
Yeah, the DAZN commentary team, because I was watching that coverage of it, and they were very much of the tactical analysis that Persoon just kept coming at her and was explaining how she was actually managing to catch Taylor here and there and where Taylor was going wrong. And they too had it being a draw, if not a Persoon victory. Okay. But as you mentioned there, like Persoon she took that welt under her right eye pretty early on. She had the broken nose, we later found out. And she took that shot to the jaw pretty early in the fight too. She would have rocked anybody, but probably would have left them sitting on the canvas. And she kept coming. The one thing that I took away from that fight is what an absolute warrior Delphine Persoon is, and deserves every bit of credit coming out of these two fights.
I don't think Taylor would particularly want to get involved, Nathan, in a trilogy.
No, but maybe the money is right. Particularly, I don't remember a pay-per-view in this country in recent times that so many people signed up to. Everyone I spoke to, all my mates, had paid the 20, 25 quid and weren't watching on DAZN. Almost all of them were watching on Sky Sports box office. So I think the desire is there. And all right, Povatkin and had that knockout that probably deserved top billing in the end. But there was a sense in the build-up that actually that this Katie Persoon fight was going to be the real deal. So right now, straight afterwards, it did feel as though maybe both of them felt the trilogy wasn't on. Mm. But there was such excitement and such interest that actually maybe the money, maybe they can go to America, maybe we can get crowds back. And there is such a, like, Katie, one of the most enjoyable parts is she's just such a badass. She's got just that Michael Jordan attitude of, you have wronged me. And the look on her face when Persoon was being complimentary, she couldn't quite believe it, because even though Katie had won the fight, there was no real sense of looking to Persoon and, yes, we've had another dogged battle and let's embrace and let's move on. It was no, we flat out don't like each other here. And just because we fought and I've won doesn't mean it's going to change that. And then Persoon is full of compliments. And Katie, you can tell, doesn't really know how to react to that. Like, no, I've built this up in my head so much now, I can't just change my mind and be all nicey-nicey here.
Yeah. We'll talk to Kenneth Egan this hour. I know he tweeted that he would have found a draw digestible, was the phrase I think he used from the top of my head. I think he gave the fight to Taylor, but he said a draw would have been digestible. Andy Lee, had the fight a draw going into the last round. So it's not like it was utterly comfortable either. Now, lots of people, Irish journalists who know their boxing, have said it was absolutely comfortable and Taylor did all the cleaner work and landed the cleaner punches. But clearly, based on Adam Smith, Matthew Macklin, Anthony Joshua, Johnny Nelson, there is a weighting given to taking the fight to your opponent, being the aggressor, throwing more punches. It probably comes down to some kind of question of interpretation as much as the rules of judging a fight. It's why boxing has, you know, has been so open to dodgy decisions, because there is a degree of interpretation there. I'm sure Kenneth Egan has seen plenty of decisions that he didn't agree with down the years, so it will be interesting as much as anything to get his thoughts on the judging of the fight, because it's I don't know, it's just an odd one. I can't think, Nathan, of too many sports where you would have the likes of Adam Smith, Matthew Macklin, Joshua, Johnny Nelson, all these guys getting the decision wrong. You know, like, we wouldn't watch a football match and all think, yeah, well, they were much the better side, but they lost 4-0. It doesn't really tend to happen that way.
Maybe particularly for Matthew Macklin and those who were there on the night, you are that bit more caught up in the emotion and not sat at home with a clearer view on it. But like, you got to trust the judges in this, in that, like, if Katie is to go and be that aggressive, Katie probably loses the fight. Mm. Like, Katie is the smarter fighter. She's the artist here against the brawler. And it's a good thing, actually, that that was rewarded, that actually going with her game plan, picking her punches, brilliant defensive display, that all of that is spotted, rather than just what we're seeing at home, which is one very aggressive fighter, very exciting fighter, very exciting clash of styles, which set it up beautifully. But yeah, it's interesting how almost all, and I don't think it is hometown bias, because it is all very respected boxing writers who felt that Katie won relatively comfortably, even though a 96-94 is just one round, essentially, away from being a draw.
Yeah.
But that those that were there on the night were very much caught up in the Persoon. And I was absolutely, particularly when I heard that first judge, was it the 98-93, thought, whoa, they really have gone for Persoon here.
I mean, it just shows how influenced we are by commentary as much as anything. But her aggression was unmistakable. We'll talk to Kenneth Egan at this hour. Any questions you want for Ken, fire them in. 53106. You'll get us at Off The Ball on Twitter. Champions League final last night. Thought the first half, Nathan, was very, very good. I enjoyed it. A lot of quality on show. Bubbling away nicely. PSG, man, they had their chances. Second half just didn't work for me. It got incredibly scrappy.
Yeah, it just fell really flat in the second half, particularly from Paris Saint-Germain's point of view. You're in a Champions League final, and they put up no fight at all. After they went behind, okay, there was that one chance for Choupo-Moting, but aside from that, the amount of tactical fouling throughout the game, It was frustrating in the first half, but the technical quality of both sets of players, as you say, sort of shone through and set it up perfectly that you thought we are going to get this classic in the second half as it opens up a little bit. But the fouling was just never ending, particularly on Neymar and Mbappe. And while Mbappe kept going, Neymar, you just felt after the goal went in, his head went. He just thought, it's not my night. Like, his basic control in the last 20 minutes was not what you would expect from one of the best players in the world. Never mind the whole other side, the leadership qualities you would want from him in that situation. Yeah, so it ended up being quite a forgettable final after a 45 minutes that flew along. Lots of chances for both sides. Could easily have been 2-1, 2-all at the break. And then just a nothingness of the second half. Though Bayern, I think, deserved winners. Just a far physically stronger, better organised, more talented squad.
Yeah, Lequipe went to town on Neymar. I think they gave him a 2 or a 3 out of 10, which is hard.
Right.
He lost his concentration for sure. Because he kept showing for the ball even in the second half, but was just in a way that I would suspect is alien to him 99% of the time. As you said, was miscontrolling it. And then the body language was terrible. I mean, he's not a great man for steely, unreadable body language, Neymar. You tend to have a fair idea what kind of mood he's in, and his mood was dipping. But he was good in the first half. And Richie, you know, Neymar chance in the first half, brilliantly saved by Neuer. The Mbappe one will haunt them. That was massive. Di Maria had kind of a half chance. I did think in the second half the referee lost the game a bit. I mean, if tactical fouling is ruining the spectacle, surely, and you know, it's tough on whoever the fall guy is, but you have to start handing out lots of yellows and maybe someone walks, but at least it protects the game a little bit more. I thought the referee just let the tactical fouling happen.
Yeah, the referee, I got a bad sense of him in the first half. He's one of these ones that seemed to want to make himself, by any means necessary, the focus of attention. And even if that meant letting the game flow a little bit, even if it shouldn't have done. But as you mentioned there, it's the PSG chances in the first half that'll come to haunt them. But ultimately, for the money that they've spent, I mean, there was a comparison. I know they're very unreliable in terms of side-by-side and what people have spent. And the balance of that would have been towards Neymar and Mbappe. Like, PSG did not have a midfield worthy of winning the Champions League last night. And I know Bayern's defence was a bit hodgepodge by the time full-time came. But the midfield is not what you'd want. They brought on Marco Verratti, who's probably a couple of years now past his best. Injuries have taken their toll on him. For what PSG have spent, they've really spent it in an imbalanced way. And they need a better depth of squad if they're ever going to properly challenge this level again. I put this season down as being a freak. I don't think in a normal season they probably would have reached the Champions League final. But they need to, if they're going to reinvest, spend it a little bit better and spend it in areas that are crying out for it at the moment. They need a new centre-half. Thiago Silva's gone, as we know. Their midfield isn't really good enough at the moment. Yeah. And they probably need an attacker or two, so you're not relying on someone like Eric Choupo-Moting when you're down past your Mbappes and past your Neymars.
Damien Delaney's going to come on after 9 o'clock, so we'll chat about the game to him. Texting from Brian, can anyone reasonably dispute that Taylor is the finest Irish athlete of this generation? Who has come close to her levels of excellence, commitment, dedication, work rate over the last 15 years? Nobody is jumping to mind. Taylor, the finest of her generation, I would think that's a fair
Rory McIlroy.
Rory McIlroy, are you just trying to troll people? Do you just want people to text in mean things?
No, I always think with Katie, because the one thing that's thrown back is the depth in women's boxing.
Yeah.
But Katie has shown at both amateur level and our professional level that regardless of ability, and which is right up there, like, she changed the game. She changed women's boxing first at amateur level, and now you'd have to say at professional level with what we're seeing, with what Matchroom invested in her, and she is repaying them 10 times over. So whatever about in the ring, which, you know, you can't really question either, outside of the ring, she has just changed a sport in a way I don't think any Irish person has ever changed a sport.
Yeah, that's a very fair point as well. On McIlroy, and setting aside the 26-32 county argument for a moment, if you want to text that in, I would not waste your time. For the purposes of the conversation, if he, you know, Irish golf for McIlroy, I mean, in some respects, the worst thing he ever did, Nathan, was win the four too quickly. If he'd picked off a major every 2 years for the last 10 years, we'd be saying, my God, this guy is just incredible. But so, you know, recency bias almost goes against him.
Yeah, but he was for a number of years, and some would argue even still, the best player in his chosen field, which McIlroy, or which Katie Taylor is as well. And there's very few Irish people who've got to that level. Do we have anybody else currently?
No, I mean, Lowry obviously won a major last year, but he's not consistently up there. He hasn't been world number one, so no. And there is definitely more depth to the men's golf than there is to the women's boxing. That's not Katie Taylor's fault. They're just the circumstances. Those would be the two, though, wouldn't they? Is there anyone else we're drastically overlooking?
Not off the top of my head. I do know when we were going through the Mount Rushmores, when they went through County Down, and you were like, they had George Best and Rory McIlroy. You're thinking, George Best for a period of time was probably the best footballer in the world, and Rory McIlroy for a period of time the best golfer in the world. We've had very few, even Potter Carrington, who I might have as Ireland's best ever sports person, you know, wasn't the best in the world at that time. He just did unbelievable things because he was in the era of Tiger Woods, whereas McIlroy actually post-Tiger was. We're getting into McIlroy again. It won't end well.
No.
He's not enjoying not having the fans out there.
He's not enjoying something, that's for sure. I was checked on Saturday. I was like, oh, he's out with Tiger. Lunchtime, how's he doing? And there were two triple bogeys on the front nine. And you think, God, this is...
Yeah, he said in his post-round comments on Sunday night that just not getting any buzz at all out here.
Right.
No, nobody cheering, nothing happening. Not really for me.
Good buzz in Clifton, apparently.
Just needs a nice dinner afterwards. Yeah. Something to look forward to.
And a George Foreman as a prize instead of a big check.
Did they reveal who won the George Foreman?
I don't know.
I thought George Foreman was trending and I thought, oh, good God,
Everybody thought he was dead.
Yeah. The news round is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. Richie, you're starting with Stephen Kenny's first Irish international squad.
23 men in it for the Nations League games with Bulgaria and Finland. Jason Malumbi and Adam Ida are the two uncapped players stepping up from Kenny's under-21s. James McCarthy, Robbie Brady and Harry Arter are among the experienced midfielders retained. There's also a place for Stokes Player of the Year, James McLean. Troy Parrott's been included among the eight attackers as David McGoldrick will miss the Bulgaria trip with a foot injury. Michael Obafemi, though, didn't take his exclusion well. The Southampton striker tweeted and then quickly deleted the word disgrace before settling on interesting and a couple of emojis. Kenny addressed the exclusion of a player who scored four times in 25 appearances for the Premier League side last season.
Yeah, well, Michael will be in with the under-21 team with Jim Crawford, you know, and I think Michael is a good player, good talent also, you know, and I think he scored a couple of very good goals last year, so I think it'll be interesting to see Michael with the under-21 team in the up-and-coming games.
And Nathan and I will be talking about this a bit more on the football show. We'll bring you through a lot of what Stephen Kenny was saying. On the Obafemi point, seeing as that's what Stephen Kenny is talking about there and his tweet, that's what has generated the headlines, Nathan. Like, Callum Robinson's in the squad. Okay, he's not a forward. Forward's in the squad. Aaron Connolly, Ida, Troy Parrott, Shane Long, David McGoldrick pending his foot injury coming good. I mean, there's plenty of ammunition there. Kenny talked about wanting somebody who could play the lone striker position, not something Obafemi has done. And then probably a point in as a tangent to his tweet today, which was not best advised, Hasselhoodl at Southampton has certainly twice in the last 7-8 months raised Obafemi's professionalism. And it certainly publicly has been stern with him, I would say. And we're then kind of speculating and guessing, but maybe there's something there.
Quite possibly, and listen, a tweet like this doesn't help matters, and it is now the only story, and what was probably quite an uneventful squad announcement. Glenn Whelan, maybe that's the end of his international career. Jack Byrne not being in there would have been the two stories, but this will dominate for 24 hours. Will he go in with the 21s? Who knows? They may not even have a game the way things are going. So, yeah, there's questions about his attitude. And from his point of view, he's looking at Troy Parrott and Adam Ida thinking, I've achieved a lot more than they have this season. But Stephen Kenny knows what system he wants to play. And both Troy Parrott and Adam Ida have done that from consistently at 21s level in a couple of different positions from Troy Parrott's point of view. Whereas Michael Obafemi, for various reasons, has featured very little under Stephen Kenny. So maybe he just needs a little bit of time. You hope this doesn't become a saga. You hope this doesn't become a thing of he tries to call him up next month and Michael Obafemi says, screw you. You really hope it doesn't become one of those scenarios because he is only 20. He is playing in the Premier League. Yeah. He's had a few issues, but he's a strong, fast, pacey forward, and we don't have a huge amount of them. So I just hope for everyone's sake, this isn't some nonsensical thing that drags on for the next 6 months.
Yeah, you would suspect they're trying to smooth it over behind the scenes even as we speak. Now, next story. You know what they say? You need a new manager. You get on the phone to Filippo Giovinazzi, whatever his name is. What's going on here?
Yeah, Dundalk are reportedly set to appoint Filippo Giovagnoli as their new head coach. There you go. The Lily Whites parted company with Vinnie Perth on Thursday night, all down to a difference of opinion. Perth told Soccer Republic on Friday. Giovagnoli previously oversaw AC Milan's summer camps, but has most recently been at New York's Metropolitan Oval Academy.
I know he's a long career. He got up to Serie A C. I'm not sure what the Italian for C is. What was it?
C.
Played some Serie C in his day. 18-year career. But, I mean, there's left field, Nathan, and there's left field.
Yeah, and listen, the headlines don't look good when you see head of AC Milan's summer camps. And maybe that's very unfair on this man who, as you say, has had a long career within football. Clearly has managed in America to make some connections along the way with these American owners. They're saying probably a short-term appointment. The feeling still seems to be that Dundalk want to go out and eventually get a big name. But it just, again, shows it looks as though it's an absolute mess behind the scenes. When you hear some of the stories coming out of the owners and those behind the scenes trying to influence the team selection for last week, you got to feel Vinnie Perth is better off out there. And it's a real shame also, because everyone had got on board with this Dundalk project just to see where it could go and how far it could go. And really does feel like it's just unraveling at the moment.
Yeah, it's very strange. Lads, why is the AC Milan cool camp director coming in to manage Dundalk? Well, I don't know. He just he is. Jeff Hendrick, I think this is a good move for Hendrick.
Yeah, seemingly, especially since Newcastle got rid of Nabil Bentaleb and needed a kind of similar player in midfield. Newcastle completing the signing of Hendrick on a free transfer today. The Republic of Ireland midfielder released by Burnley earlier this summer, and he has agreed a 4-year deal at St James's Park. Steve Bruce saying he's been wanting to get hold of him for quite a while.
Usain Bolt.
Yeah, Usain Bolt says he's self-isolating, having been tested for COVID-19. Reports in his native Jamaica claim that the 8-time Olympic gold medalist has tested positive. Bolt celebrated his 34th birthday at the weekend with an extravagant party, whose guest list included Raheem Sterling and cricket legend Chris Gayle. The 100 and 200-metre world record holder has advised all those that have been in close contact with him to quarantine.
Good morning, everybody. Just waking up. And like everybody has checked social media, saw that social media saying I'm confirmed of COVID-19. I did a test on Saturday to leave because I have work, trying to be responsible, so I'm going to stay in and stay for my friends. And also, I'm having no symptoms, so going to quarantine myself and wait on the confirmation to see what is the protocol and how should I go about quarantining myself from the Ministry of Health. So until then, talk to all my friends and tell them that if you're not coming in contact with me, you should just to be safe, quarantine by yourself and just to take it easy. And just to make people know, be safe out there. All right, cool.
So Rich, he's been tested. He doesn't have the results yet.
He doesn't have the results yet. Okay. Press in his local in his native Jamaica say that he has in fact tested positive. They were tweeting and reporting on this quite extensively over the course of the last 24 hours and of that massive party that was hosted in his honour for his 34th birthday at the weekend. I would suggest that Raheem Sterling is probably having an awkward conversation with the medical crew back in Manchester City at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, as an athlete, it's just not something you want to go near. I mean, you can get lucky, obviously, and be asymptomatic and problem-free throughout, and then it can obviously go a whole different way. Where are we going next?
Ian Barraclough says he's disappointed that Mark Sykes took away opportunities from another youngster that actually wanted to play for Northern Ireland. The Oxford midfielder is switching allegiances to the Republic, having played under-21 football for the North, much like Shane Duffy and James McLean before him. And Barraclough says he was shocked to lose a player with whom he'd worked closely at under-21 level.
For as an association, look, I'm bitterly disappointed for coaches, managers, the people that have been involved in bringing someone like Mark Sykes through the system. Say he played for me at 21s, but you know that's just a small part of it, of his development. There's many coaches and managers that have spent time, you know, the IFA's finances on someone like him, and it's disappointing to get to a stage where he's actually been in three squads, and you know he's decided to move to the Republic, and for me, I want players that are fully focused. You know, determined to play 100% for Northern Ireland, and so we say we have to move on, and you know it gives somebody else a chance now. But unfortunately, you know, I can't unwind what you know, for a young player that would have been developed at the same time as Mark, you know, you know, what chances that he would have had maybe of coming through into a squad.
Nathan, if we've had to look at the likes of Declan Rice and Jack Grealish go towards England, Northern Ireland have watched their fair share come down to the Republic.
Yeah, look, and they'll obviously point to James McLean and Shane Duffy and Darren Gibson, but I think that's extremely harsh from Ian Paraclough on the player, a young player. We don't know what conversations have happened down through the years. He may well, when he was 15 and 16, said, I'm not quite sure, and been asked, listen, come on in, see what you think. You don't have to make a decision yet. So to say that he's taken it away from the other young player may have made the exact same decision as well. The option is there, and obviously quite a few players take up that option. So I think it's like on a guy who's, what, 20, 21, to be putting it all on him that he's denied somebody else potentially a career, an international career. That, unfortunately, from a Northern Ireland point of view, is the situation. Like, do they ask players to sign a form at 16? Like, legally, I'm sure they can't do that, so... Yeah. I don't know what the answer from their point of view is. You can understand why they're frustrated, but no, I think right. To put it back on the player is totally unfair.
And in fairness, we were all very chill about the Declan Rice, Jack Grealish situation as a country. So, you know, just follow our example. Be cool about it.
I was very much on the, listen, Declan Rice, the whole thing, he came through the system. Like, this system is there. Again, we don't know what conversations happened with Declan Rice down through the years, either in terms of his commitment, until you've played that competitive international, and they're even on about changing that now, potentially. I know people, we know people who feel very strongly about Jack Grealish and Declan Rice. I wasn't one of them. Hence why, you know, he got Ireland Under 21 Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Apologies for that.
Yeah. Somebody mentions Paul O'Donovan and Sinéad Pusspor as well as athletes of the generation. I mean, O'Donovan in particular is probably underrated. He is exceptional. World class. And, you know, individually has won world championships. Probably doesn't get the credit he deserves. That was from Owen in Cork. Lads, where are all these League of Ireland players that Stephen Genny was going to pick, says Garrett. With Jack Burns on standby for a start, Nathan.
Yeah. I don't think Stephen Genny made any guarantees that he will pick players. But what you do know is he has an interest in the league. As I said, regardless of maybe whether he wanted to or not, he's watching an awful lot of League of Ireland games at the moment because he can't go to England. So he's seeing exactly what Jack Byrne is about, what Graham Burke is about. I know Burke's been in and out. What Michael Duffy is about, knows him very well. So the players won't have any excuses that they're not being seen. They will be seen. And Stephen Kenny, remember, League of Ireland players, they might get into a 40-man squad from time to time. They were rarely getting into the 23 for competitive internationals. Mm-hmm. So like, that's always going to be the situation, you'd imagine.
Yeah. Lads, he overlooked or maybe just forgot Johnny Sexton in the greatest of the last 15 years discussion, given you focused on whether that person was, quote, the best in the world at their own sport at some stage, end quote. He would surely have to meet the criteria as World Player of the Year 2018. Are you going to add him to the list now? Well, seeing as the list is just me scribbling on the sheet in front of me, I'll stick him down. It's no trouble. Yeah,
why not? Work well.
When are we building all these Mount Rushmores, by the way?
Johnny Sexton didn't get on the Dublin Mount Rushmore, did he? No.
Remind
Paul
me.
Paul O'Donovan didn't get in the Cork Mount Rushmore.
Did he not? Remind me the Dublin Mount Rushmore. Harrington O'Driscoll?
No, O'Driscoll didn't make it.
Oh, did he not? Harrington?
Harrington, Michael Carruth.
Carruth.
Jim Gavin.
And Giles?
There was a footballer. Paul McGrath.
Oh, yeah.
God, that's ridiculously competitive. We'll be talking to Rory O'Connor and Keith Wood after 8 o'clock. I mean, the lingering image, Richie, in some respects, is Orgy Snyman limping off after 6-7 minutes.
Dreadful look for the Springbok second row. He'll undergo an MRI on that injured knee. As you mentioned there, he lasted just 7 minutes of the game against Leinster on Saturday before picking up the injury. Further worries for Munster, Dave Kilcoyne also requires a scan on his ankle, while John Klein will continue to have a neck injury monitored. Mike Haley will return to training this week following a calf problem. On the other side of the ball, Jonathan Sexton, Keane Healy and Josh van der Flyer all remain in contention for Leinster's meeting with Ulster. All three picked up knocks in that win on Saturday. Rhys Ruddock, Tyke Furlong and Dave will be assessed this week, but Dan Levy remains unavailable for the moment but is increasing his training load this week following that long term injury.
Okay, your line is just breaking up a touch, Rich, but we'll see how we go with the last two stories.
Yeah, Katie Taylor,
sorry, that ain't going to work. We've lost you, unfortunately. Nathan, are you okay there?
Something about Katie Taylor. It sounded very harsh from Richard.
I'll jump in. She's been ranked as the number two best pen for pen boxer in Ring Magazine's first ever women's list, undisputed lightweight champion, is listed below three-weight world champion Clarissa Shields. Taylor, as we were discussing, defended her titles, a unanimous decision victory over Delphine Persoon on Saturday. And Shields has criticised the comments of one in the judging panel. He claimed that the three-weight world champion would have lost to either Taylor or Persoon. Shields tweeted to say, "Taylor does not have better defence than me. I won't be losing or having split decision fights no matter who I face." The golf, Rory McIlroy has dropped to world number four after a disappointing weekend at the Northern Trust.
Here's the big story in the golf.
World number one. I'm coming to it.
Go.
McIlroy finished tied for 65th. He was just the 28 shots adrift of Dustin Johnson. 28 shots. Dustin Johnson was ridiculous over the weekend. And then the big story, as you said, Nathan, in the world of golf, really, Germany's Sofia Popoff. Huge shock. She won the Women's Open at Royal Troon. Started the tournament ranked 304th in the world. She considered quitting the sport last year. Stephanie Meadow, highest placed Irish player on 9 over. That was an extraordinary story. They had dreadful weather. She came through brilliantly.
She did. And I watched most of yesterday's round and just completely unfazed on the back nine. Never looked like she was going to lose this. And as you say, world number 304. To put it in context, she's been playing on the Symetra Tour, which is the second string tour in America. And 3 weeks ago, she was a caddy on the LPGA for one of her friends because she wanted to just hang around with her, see what her temperament was like on the course and see what she could learn from a better quality of player. And she wasn't in the field. So she went out and caddied on the LPGA 3 weeks ago and then turns up ranked outside the top 300 in the world and wins a major championship. She only qualified last week by finishing top 10 in the Symetra Tour in an event that, because of COVID, most players didn't travel to. It is just an insane story.
Insane, yeah. The margins in golf are nuts. Like, a tennis player doesn't turn up and just beat Roger Federer as number three or five in the world, but the margins in golf are just so insane. We are pretty much done. Nathan, thank you. We're back in the football show.
Yeah, talk to you then.
Cheers. And I should mention as well, before we talk to Kenneth Egan, OTB Sports, in partnership with Cadbury FC, we're kicking off a brand new series of in-depth chats with some of the biggest names in the Premier League and Irish football as well. We've got some great names coming up. Stay tuned. We're going to have some doozies coming up for you over the next couple of weeks. We're getting the ball rolling with a goalkeeping special. Paddy Bonner and Shay Given, who it turns out have an amazing relationship going back to when Shay first met him as a 12-year-old. They're going to sit down with myself, and that chat will be coming your way August 27th across OTB Sports social channels. And you can check out CadburyFC.com for updates on promotions and giveaways. So look out for that. Coming up next, Kenneth Egan.
The OTB Podcast Network.